Hello, welcome back to the latest edition of the Selby is Godcast. I'm TJ Zuppi, he is Zach Meisel. We are both from The Athletic Cleveland. Of course, we cover the Tribe. Zach, good to talk to you again. We've traded places officially. I'm out in Arizona where I've planned this trip beautifully. It's the second day I'm out here. They're already having an off day. I mean, how much better could I have planned this?
Meanwhile, I'm staring out at snow, and I was hitting a wall. I thought I was ready to come home. You just hit the monotony of spring training at once you've been there long enough. I'm ready to come back. I miss sunshine.
I strolled outside. I figured it would be better to do it out in my car where I could open up the sunroof a little bit and I could sit out here in my shorts and t-shirt and just be able to really feel comfortable to do this podcast and not get bothered and have anybody pop in mid-podcast. Although it might be fun to have like the cleaning crew come in and do my hotel room in the middle of the podcast. That's always fun, right?
You know, I had that happen at the winter meetings. I was meeting with a member of the Indians scouting department, and we met in his hotel room to do this talk because it was so loud in that hotel. And the cleaning crew came in and interrupted twice. And both times we had, I'm recording something. He's in the middle of a really good answer and he has to get up, answer the door, tell them, come back later. It happened twice. So that can happen.
That's what makes this fun. If there weren't things like that happening at all times, I mean, this would be pretty boring. This would not be a fun job. I always like that there's something that could cause chaos right in the midst of what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, like me sitting in my car doing this podcast wearing snow pants and a parka.
Also, your dog doesn't intervene in the podcast, too. As many times as he'd like to be a part of it, I think you could bring in Linus, I can bring in Ethan. My cat often makes an appearance when I'm at home. So anytime we can bring special guests onto the podcast, I feel like we should do it.
Yeah, I was doing a phone interview actually late last week, and I was transcribing it yesterday, and it was like an hour long, and you can just hear for at least 40 of the minutes you hear my dog barking in the background. And like he was downstairs in his crate and I'm upstairs in my office, which is like the corner of the house. It should be quiet. Door was closed and you can just still hear constant barking. So that's why I go in my car and I put on earmuffs and gloves and long johns and just deal with Cleveland.
Just don't turn the car on while you're sitting in the garage with the door closed, please.
Thanks for reminding me.
I don't want to have you just cut off mid-podcast and not know what happened to you. And we could probably go round and round with stories of random things that happened during phoner interviews. Just recently, I did an interview with SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, in which I was called by a different name at least 7 times. But there's like some sort of radar that goes off. As soon as I pick up the phone and I need peace and quiet, it could be quiet in the house for 7 straight hours. As soon as that happens, the animals are wild. My son is chasing the dog. It never fails.
I'm sure it'll get even easier for you later this year.
Yeah, just add another kid to the mix. Why not? Let's just make this all sorts of chaos. Well, Indians have made some interesting decisions, whether it's roster cuts and some additions to resumes that we'll get to. But I thought we'd start at least a little bit here talking about a team that's not the Indians, the Minnesota Twins. They've had an interesting offseason because – and I call it interesting because I think they brought in some interesting players. But I'm curious as to what you've thought, kind of the way that the Twins have gone about things and how close you think the gap is between the Indians and Twins, kind of figuring out now everything that Minnesota's done.
I still don't – I can't identify anything they do better than the Indians. The rotation, I mean, Lynn and Odorizzi are nice pickups, especially given what it cost them. But they were starting from so far behind in that arena anyway. Their pitching staff has been really bad the last few years. I think it's gotten better, and you see glimpses with the young kid Berríos and Irvin Santana when healthy and when not suspended has been pretty good. But they've had nothing at the back end of their rotation. I mean, it feels like the Indians beat up on Adalberto Mejia like 7 times a year. And they remember that the kid Adam Wilk, who pitched in that doubleheader last year, who's now in the Indians clubhouse for some reason. And I think I probably shouldn't tell this story, but one of the coaches didn't know who Adam Wilk was earlier in spring and misidentified him. But that just goes to show you what the Twins have been dealing with. So nice pickups there, but their starting pitching is not nearly as good as the Indians. The bullpen they added to, Addison Reed is a nice pickup. Fernando Rodney's like 70 years old. I don't understand that one. And I think that even speaks to how desperate they were for bullpen help. They don't have anything resembling Cody Allen or Andrew Miller. And I think even the Indians secondary guys are probably as good as the Twins secondary guys. So then you look at the lineups, and I think that's the one chance the Twins might have to like their lineup has some nice young talent. If Byron Buxton takes the next step, Dozier has always been a nice threat at the top of the order. But we don't know what Miguel Sano's deal is going to be this year. Joe Mauer's older, and I still look at the Indians, and I see Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez in their primes, and Kipnis and Brantley maybe coming back, and Edwin Encarnacion is still there. I mean, I like the direction the Twins are going. I like the way in which they made their moves and how they didn't really give up much in terms of money or prospects, so they can go hard if they want next winter. I still don't see them as a legitimate threat unless a lot of shit goes wrong with the Indians.
I feel like it's a case where like several things can be true. I agree. I think the Twins have had a nice offseason. I think they made the best of I won't say a bad situation. I don't think it was a bad situation, but the best of a situation where you don't end up with a star coming back in free agency. And they certainly set their sights high on Yu Darvish and wanted to play kind of in the deep end there for big time free agents. They didn't end up getting any of those guys. So they used that money on several different guys, which is smart. And you should do that considering the market where you have so many guys that are looking for jobs. We've talked about the middle class of free agency and how those guys have been impacted so greatly. And so the Twins went to play there where their money would spend better than a lot of other teams that weren't going to do anything or much of anything this offseason. And I think they capitalized, and they also didn't impact their future essentially at all. And none of the money that they invested is going to impact them in the long run. And so it's smart. And I think it is opportunistic on their part. The other part of this that is true is that the gap was already so gigantic for a team that I already feel like probably played a little bit above their heads last year in the Twins. So what was it, a 17-game gap? I think they've cut into that significantly. Is it closer to probably 7 to 10 games between those two teams? Yeah. And when you're talking about a 7-game gap, that's certainly within the realm of fluky shit can happen and things can get interesting really quickly. So I've said this before many times about the Twins. I think that they are a dangerous team, and that if you don't take them seriously, they could come up and take one of those wild card spots. And I think they are a contender for another playoff spot. And I think they'll benefit from the same thing the Indians will benefit from, being able to beat up on three of the teams within the division. Sure. All of that is true, but still, there's still at least a somewhat significant gap between these two teams. And the starting pitching is a big part of that. The bullpen is a part of that. And these moves could all pay off and all be pretty smart. And Logan Morrison could put together another season like he had last year. But I still feel like if all of those things happen, they would have to hope for some significantly unforeseen things to take place on the Indian side of things, whether it's injuries in the rotation or guys just being completely uncharacteristically bad for this to really become a tight division race.
So here's the fallacy that a lot of people fall into, and I think it's important to take a step back. We've talked about this, but a lot of people take October results, add the winter transactions, and think that like it's a linear formula, and like, okay, the Twins went from a crappy team to a wild card team, and then they added pieces, so now the next logical step is 90 wins. And they look at the Indians and they say, okay, well, they got knocked out in the first round, so we know they're not as good as the Yankees or the Astros. They lost a bunch over the offseason. So next logical step is, I don't know, 90 wins and maybe they're on the way down. Like, it doesn't work like that. It's not linear at all. And, you know, I wonder if the Twins would have knocked off the Yankees, and what were they up, 3-0 in the first inning? If they would have beaten the Yankees in that wild card game, which is a coin flip, you know, how are people thinking about those two teams right now, the Indians and the Twins? Because I think we all agree the Indians would have beaten the Twins in the division series. Who knows what would have happened after that? But if that is the case, like if the Indians swept the Twins or beat them 3-1 in the division series, do people have a different viewpoint on this? Do they think that no matter what the Twins did this offseason, they wouldn't have been able to be in the same conversation as the Indians? I mean, I think a lot of what people fall into is just assuming that like the Astros and the Yankees are on this pedestal because they variance went their way in October and they outplayed the and the Yankees outplayed the Indians and the Astros outplayed the Yankees. I mean, it doesn't work like that. So I think you need to, it's hard to do, but you have to try to block out last season and just kind of go in with just a refreshed mind when you are making these projections. And that's why you look at whatever Pecota says or the other projection systems, and it's like, yeah, the Indians are still projected to win the division by like 10 or 11 games. And that shouldn't shock you.
No, I don't think so either. And if things were linear, then the Indians coming off a postseason where they had 2.5 starters and added Edwin Encarnacion and a healthy Carlos Carrasco for the postseason, and all those things should have, what, led to a World Series title, right? If you reach the World Series in 2016, lacking some of those things and you make your club better, then you should go out and win the World Series. It didn't end up working that way. And this is why it's so important, and it is difficult too, because baseball is really two different things. One, it's this long, grueling marathon where depth is so important and you've got to be able to outlast and outwit your competition and
before the tribe has spoken.
and this is a war of attrition constantly. And then you get into the postseason and it's all happening real fast. And guys that are having big series or star power wins those games. And it's a completely different game decided in a completely different manner than the actual regular season is. And I still think the Indians are built to have success in both cases. Do you agree? I mean, what have we seen? Even though they've lost some, I don't see anything there that has drastically changed my mind on whether or not the Indians can go win the World Series this year.
The reason they lost the division series was because of three individuals. And there were other things that went into this too. But Corey Kluber didn't pitch like Corey Kluber. And Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor didn't hit like Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor had the previous 162 games. So it's the postseason. You still need stars. You need people to rise to the occasion. But you need if you have that starting pitching, like Kluber and Carrasco, and whether it's Bauer or Clevinger or Salazar, whoever will be there in October, that still is your meal ticket. And then you need guys to produce. I mean, the Indians are absolutely built for this. We don't know what the Twins are built for yet. But I think if you really believe that the Twins have closed a 17-game gap or that they – I give them credit. Like, they should have a nice season. They should have a lot of things going for them, especially given the division in which they play. But if you can find me what they do better than the Indians, then you're probably falling into the trap of looking at October, taking what happened in November, December, January, February, I guess early March, and ignoring how this actually works.
Now, in fairness, this conversation feels a little bit like the whole nobody believed in this, where you're creating a false narrative. I don't think, Zach, that anyone is realistically believing that the Twins, even with a solid offseason, are legitimate competition where they're going to be there probably in those last, you know, that those last few series are going to decide things. Probably not. And I don't think most people believe that. But I also believe that the Twins are very capable of making the postseason again this year. And sure. I think it would be more shocking than not if they weren't right there in the thick of the wild card race right to the end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not I'm not saying the Indians are going to win by 20 games and this is nothing to sweat. Like, baseball's weird. Injuries happen. Regression happens. Inexplicable things happen. And it's certainly possible the Indians don't win the division or they have a crappy year. But I'm just saying everything should still point to the Indians being the Titans of the division and the Twins still lacking in some areas that should expose themselves over the course of 6 months. But you're right. I mean, the tough thing is that the American League is loaded. I mean, you look at the Astros, Yankees, and Indians, and then the Red Sox now with J.D. Martinez should still be a threat. I mean, they won that division last year. Let's remember, the Yankees were the wild card team. You got the Angels who made a bunch of additions. And then the Twins, and I don't know, like the Mariners always claim to be contending, but always finish
78 wins. Just pencil it in right now. 78 wins.
Why doesn't Jeff Fisher should coach them? but yeah, I mean,
would he be a better football coach or baseball coach at this point?
That's a great question. but you're right. I mean, the one thing that gives the Twins an advantage that those other teams don't have is that they do play in the Central. And you should be able to beat up on 60% of your – or 75% of your interdivision matchups.
I thought it was really interesting yesterday when we were talking about Francisco Mejia, who got optioned to AAA, which is not surprising. We all expected he was not going to start the year on the major league roster. And we've talked about endlessly that it's going to be difficult to create spots for him if you're only focused on catching and maybe DHing some. Now, we know he tried him at third base, and Tito even said yesterday that from the outset of them making that decision, he wasn't too keen on it. Didn't seem really excited about it. They never really thought that he was so gung-ho about playing third base. And that's fair, because they're asking him to play a completely different position, and he's been preparing as a catcher for quite a while here in the system, and they're very pleased with the progress that he's made behind the plate. But they've also seen him go out during batting practice and shag fly balls, and they know he has a killer arm that would probably be absolutely suited for right field, and they're going to go let him play some outfield in minor league camp and get acclimated to that. And it's not something that is going to be a full switch. It's not going to be him going away from catcher completely, but they're just looking to expand some of that toolbox for him to still continue to find ways to get his bat in the major league lineup. And I think it said something pretty hefty about their belief in him as an offensive player, what he could be. Because I don't think they would be trying this many different things with him for a top prospect. And we've often seen they handle these guys with kid gloves. They do not want them bouncing around, and they're not going to ask them to do something that they think is going to hurt their development in any way, shape, or form. They're not doing all of this and trying to find at-bats for him somehow to get to the major league level if they don't think that he's going to be, I don't know, an elite performer, but a really, really good offensive player.
I'm surprised it took this long.
Yeah, I am too. I am too.
If you look at the landscape of the outfield, Lonnie Chisenhall is in his contract year. He's gone at the end of the year, I think. Michael Brantley, this is his last year under team control. You would think he'd be gone too, unless they strike some agreement. I don't know. There are going to be openings in the outfield. And you have Roberto Perez and Yan Gomes under contract for a while. And not only that, but you have Eric Haas at AAA, who doesn't have the strongest arm, but they like what he brings in terms of pitch calling and working with the pitching staff. And so he seems like he's tailor-made for that backup catcher role at some point. So I'm not saying Mejia's days as a catcher are done, but if you look around and you're trying to, you know, if they value catcher defense, especially with this pitching staff, I mean, if you were to ask Kluber to all of a sudden just work with Mejia every day after he spent years and years getting to know Yan Gomes and working with him, and then once Roberto Perez took over the reins, that was a process with those two as well. I mean, this pitching staff has been in place for so long that they really prioritize catcher defense. And so that's why people say, oh, well, why don't you just stick him at catcher since Gomes and Perez hit 190? And it's not that simple, and that's not necessarily the best makeup of your team. And so Mejia was – look, he was never going to come up before June anyway because they weren't going to start that service clock earlier than they had to. So I think this buys them time because you have, you know, if it's mid-June and you have an injury to Gomes or Perez, then Mejia is the obvious candidate to come up. if it's mid-June and you have Brantley is re-injured and you have a hole in the outfield, maybe you try Mejia in that role. So this gives them options, and it gives them even more options a year from now, depending on how he takes to that outfield experiment. And you know, it's interesting because Terry Francona is so careful not to say anything degrading about his players, and they've said all the right things about Mejia's defense. And I know he has worked incredibly hard on his communication skills, learning English. We'll have more on that in the Thursday conversation this week on The Athletic. And he wants to be able to communicate with pitchers and have that strong rapport so that his defense behind the plate can get better. And he's got a really strong arm. So, like, he's got all the intangibles, and I think it's just – it's got to be a little frustrating for the Indians just because there is no easy, obvious answer here. Because you'd love for him to eventually be your catcher, but you can't, like – they don't have the luxury of experimenting at the big league level right now.
Right. And when you're talking about someone that has the offensive profile that he projects to have, you certainly want to try to get him behind the plate if you can. Because if he can play back there and he's got the strong arm to control the running game, and if the pitchers are comfortable enough working for him, that is a huge advantage you have over almost every other catcher in baseball. Because you're talking about a position that was like 11% below league average offensively last year. And if you get him even at league average, now you have an 11% advantage over everybody offensively at that position. So, of course, that's first and foremost with him, and I understand why they're going to continue to try to get him behind the plate just because of that advantage.
And Jose Ramirez has said Mejia is the best hitter on the roster, and that's your MVP finalist saying that. So he's hit the ball really well this spring. I mean, he looks just like, I know he's tiny, but like the way he swings, it seems so effortless. Like he could hit 300 at the major league level.
Well, you can tell, and I'm sure you saw it too. He's bulked up a little bit too. He looks a little bulkier than what he did last September. And he's not a big guy, and maybe that can fool some people, but I think he's probably got a little bit of sneaky athleticism enough that they're willing to try this in the outfield. And, you know, we've written it a couple times at The Athletic. Chances in the outfield aren't what they used to be. You don't see quite as many as you did in the corners. And with all the strikeouts and home runs, fewer balls in play, you can get away with a guy that's out there that maybe isn't an elite defender or even an average defender if the advantage they create offensively is worth it. Because it's kind of a give and take here. You know, does the percentage that he gives you offensively outweigh what he might take away defensively? And the other part of this, too, is, Zach, we don't know what he's going to be defensively. He could be a train wreck out there, or he could be okay. You know, they threw Carlos Santana out there in the World Series. Nothing bad happened, which is a miracle in itself. And then he went on to play even more outfield in his career when they played in the National League. You know, sometimes we put way too much into what a guy can do in the outfield. If he can just get the balls that he's supposed to get to and catch them and not do anything drastically horrible, and occasionally maybe keep a runner at first base from keeping going to second with his arm, or throwing a guy out, or causing a guy to at least hesitate for a half second because he's got a strong arm, then maybe you kind of make up the difference that way. But the biggest thing is with this is if he's the biggest determining factor is he going to hit the way that they think he is? And if he does, and if he goes down to AAA and just starts mashing, there's going to be a point, Zach, where they're going to say, we can't hold him down anymore, especially if anybody is struggling at all, or as you said, injured at the major league level, or they can't find anybody to hit left-handed pitching because they're so left-handed heavy right now. They're just having this opportunity to maybe throw him in the outfield once or twice a week if they need to, and then maybe DH him and then throw him behind the plate. If they're creative enough, hell, he could play 4 or 5 times a week.
And this, we can tie this back to our first topic, because people spend so much time fixating on the losses of Joe Smith and Brian Shaw and Jay Bruce. The Jay Bruce one, like, I get the relievers. They haven't really done much to address the bullpen. But, like, people are still upset that they lost Jay Bruce, who signed, if the Mets didn't offer Jay Bruce $39 million, Jay Bruce might still be out there. Like, who knows? Anyway, and we don't focus on the fact that there's this 22-year-old stud hitter who, if they can find him a position, could absolutely contribute in the second half and and be an essential part of this lineup. We don't consider Yandy Diaz and the strides he might take with a full season under his belt and what he might be able to do with some regular playing time if they can find a spot for him. I mean, there are still pieces here that have untapped potential, and I kind of think that gets thrown by the wayside.
That's an excellent transition to a guy that hit his first home run of the spring yesterday, Bradley Zimmer, and he crushed it to a little bit to the left of center field. You know where the batter's eye is in center field, and it's got that huge wall out there. He hit it just to the left of it where the batter's eye is still a little bit higher than the wall, but it was an absolute crush job. I mean, he smashed it. And sometimes I think we kind of forget that, you know, what we saw last year with him isn't necessarily, you know, what he is going to be over the length of his career. You know, I think we probably get too caught up in seeing a prospect for the first time and the shine kind of comes off of him. And we just come to think that what he was in that first glimpse that we saw might be what he is. And it could ultimately be that Zimmer is never going to grow into being a plus offensive guy or someone that's much better than league average. And maybe he just brings value in speed and defense, and that's valuable in itself. But there are times where he does something where I go, you know, this guy's got the capability of being much better than just your average two-win player because he's kind of speedy and can play center field pretty good. He's got some untapped power in there. And I think we might see some more of that growth this year. And if that's the case, and especially if he grows into being more of an everyday type of guy in this lineup, then that would provide a pretty hefty boost too that we're probably not even thinking about right now.
Yeah, he's always going to have that strikeout. He's always going to be prone to strikeouts. He's like a praying mantis. I mean, he's like 6'13". He's skinny. He's absolutely ripped. He kind of looks like Bert from Sesame Street. And he's just got a ton of potential all around. I mean, how many times last season did we just our jaws were on the floor because of a catch he made in center field, rushing back and diving toward the wall. I mean, it's incredible defensively the difference he made, especially after we all sat through Tyler Naquin at that position the year before. But and on the bases too. And so, like, if you only get those two elements, I think you're happy, you're satisfied, because he's going to be hitting probably ninth. He's going to be hitting near the bottom of the order, at least, in the bottom third. And so if you got the speed element, the ability to steal 30 bases easily, and you get the defense, you'd be happy with that. But there is power. He's hit for power in the minors. He's got that long swing. I mean, he's jacked. He's very muscular. So, like, if he gets a hold of a fastball or a hanging breaking ball, he's definitely got the ability to hit it out. But it's going to be a matter of consistency, because we saw him come up last year and he held his own at the plate for a while, and then he went into that, I think it was 0-for-37 slump. And that happens. Rookies, they get into funks, pitchers adjust, they figure out the weaknesses. And sometimes it takes a while for a first-year guy to get back on track. So it's going to be he's going to be fascinating to watch. You're right. He's another one of those guys where we just assume players stay at their same production level from one year to the next. We don't think, oh, maybe Bradley Zimmer will actually, you know, turn into a 3 or 4 WAR player. And I think it's silly to overlook things like that. Now, he might not. He might strike out 200 times. He might struggle to hit 200 and only hit 10 home runs. But I think just based on what he did in the minor leagues and what he's exhibited at times at the big leagues, he's got a lot of potential. I mean, There's a reason he was a first-round pick, even from a smaller school.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to develop into a star or the best player on the team or challenge Lindor for that or any of that sort of thing. And I think the speed and defense kind of keeps the floor higher than for most, which is fine. Because like I said, speed and defense, if you're at least giving you – if they're getting that from him where he's running the bases like he did last year, stealing them and playing that defense, he's going to add – a little bit above league average value, and that's fine to get that out of center field. I mean, you talked about the Naquin experiment a couple of years ago. They had some of the worst defensive center field play in baseball, and just having a guy out there that can go get them, especially if, you know, you're starting to run your catchers out to the outfield, having a guy with some range out there might help as well. But I think anybody that just assumes that we've seen the best of Bradley Zimmer in his first go around in the major leagues is probably selling him a little bit short. I think there's some room for adjustments, and he was 2 years into his swing change. He's still getting comfortable with that. Sure. Getting comfortable with being a major leaguer. I mean, just looking at him now, he looks a lot more confident just in his place and his body and knowing where he needs to be. And maybe we'll even talk about that enough, just someone being comfortable in their surroundings and how much that can mean. I mean, even you look at guys that were around last year in September, Mejia is one of them. Greg Allen's another one. You look at what they look like last spring, very timid. You know, they were minor leaguers in a big league clubhouse. They didn't look like they necessarily belonged. This year, you see Greg Allen, he's chatting, laughing, having fun. Mejia, same way, in there doing his work and going about his swings in the cages and doing all the things that he needs to do. They just look comfortable because they've been in this situation before. And I think it's probably a similar thing with Zimmer, where just because he's kind of been through this and knows what to expect, that might not add a gigantic boost, but I think it certainly will help him.
That applies to all of life. I mean, the first time you went down to Arizona for spring training, did you have any idea what you were doing?
No, but in fairness, I didn't have any idea what I was doing yesterday because they changed the whole friggin' complex. So now I don't even know where the locker room's at. I don't know where the coaches are. You can't see anybody anymore. That was one of my favorite things, is just hanging out in the hallway because it was Grand Central Station. And if you needed a coach, if you wanted to kind of hang out and see if a player was getting talked to in the office, you could see all that. Now, nope, they took all that away from us.
Yeah, it's awkward. You have to request a coach now. And so I got Carl Willis for a Thursday conversation earlier this month, and he took me back to the coach's room, and then it was awkward because there were other coaches in there working. Like, can't we just do this in the hallway like we used to? I miss those days.
I know. Everything was so much better in the past, and I'm happy now, Zach, that we can officially join that crew where we can say everything was better back in the past. One final thing from me that I wanted to touch on this week, and it is the final spot in the bullpen. I was just chatting yesterday with Jordan Bastian about this, and we're trying to just put together, you know, kind of who is the favorite, what's the depth chart there, who is running away with that job, and we could not come to any sort of consensus on this. You know, we'd say, okay, well, it's probably Belisle because he's got the track record and he had the excellent second half. Then you'd look at the stats and say, yeah, but Alexi Agondo has struck out 11 guys in like six innings, and he's been really, really good. And wait, what about Torres? Torres hasn't been that bad. And then you start going through some of the minor leaguers that aren't having a bad camp. And I am no closer to finding an answer about the bullpen than I was when I started this whole thing.
But do we know is there even a spot? Like, if they want to keep Ryan Merritt, isn't that it?
It could be. I mean, Danny Salazar would answer some of that too. If he starts on the disabled list and he's getting closer to the point where he's going to take the mound at some point, he's still going through long toss, but I don't know. I don't know. I can't handicap that spot at all. I have no feel whatsoever. And the only thing that I think that you can feel comfortable in, because, you know, once we've spent enough time around Tito to kind of learn his mannerisms and understand when he says something, what he's truly saying. And yesterday we asked about Agondo and he called him an interesting guy. And every time he's ever assigned somebody being interesting, and that was the depth of the quote, was to call him interesting, I think it means just that he's interesting, but probably not the best fit for this roster. And he dropped that, you know, they're not sure if he's a starter or if he's a reliever. Well, I mean, wouldn't you know that if he's in a in a competition for that bullpen spot? So I guess I feel like he's probably a little bit further down the depth chart than some of those other veteran guys. But God, Zach, I mean, shed some light on this for me.
I think these are the criteria you look at. One, who would be willing to go to AAA? If there are people willing to go to the minors, honestly, that probably docks them, because it's April and relievers are so random that the odds of whoever they pick actually making it through the, are you going to get that? Through the entire season are small. So if you start with one, you know, let's say you start with Belisle and he fizzles out by May, you can dig to Triple A and pick someone. But Belisle he's probably not going to go to Triple A. So if you don't go with Belisle right off the bat, you'd already be losing a guy. So I think that plays into it. And there are certain guys in camp who are probably, I mean, you mentioned like the veterans like Belisle, Torres, Ogando. There are guys, Evan Marshall, Jeff Beliveau. I think there's a couple others who, maybe they're willing to go to AAA, maybe not. But those are, I think they're more realistic in knowing that you go to AAA because you're not going to get a major league job elsewhere. Belial might think differently. I don't know. But so that's one thing. The other criteria is you forget about the stats, but is a guy hitting the velocity he should? Is he commanding his pitch as well? That's the main thing. I mean, you can look at a reliever in spring training and see that he threw 7 innings and 3 of them were against major league competition and 2 of them were so early and he was only working on fastball command. Like your sample size is going to be tiny no matter what. So I think they get just as much information when they're throwing these side sessions on a backfield and they've got the TrackMan set up and they can just analyze the velocity and the mechanics and everything and just to see if what they're doing on the mound is what they want them to be doing in April and May. So I think those are the main criteria, and obviously like health and roster construction come into this too. But it's going to be interesting. It's why, like, I think especially for a competition that has this many candidates and none of them are obvious. Like in past years, sometimes it's kind of obvious to tell who's going to make it. Some of these non-roster guys, this is not that. I mean, they could tell us tomorrow that it's like, I don't know, someone who's completely like Robert Zarate. He got sent down, right? But like, if they would have said it was him, I would have been like, okay, like the whatever. I don't know him from Beliveau or anything like that. They must see something they like. Like it's, we have no idea, and we probably won't know until the official decision comes down.
I just can't see them, no matter what they do, I can't see them signing off on giving away starting pitching depth in Ryan Merritt. I can't see it. As much as it maybe just doesn't make sense, I just can't see a scenario where they want to give that away.
Yeah, and give it away for, again, a lottery ticket. Like, you're really going to just DFA Merritt so that Carlos Torres can make the team, and then Carlos Torres might not be on the team come, like, May 15th? I mean, it seems silly. So, yeah, I think Merritt makes the team, and I think it boils down to whether or not they want 8 relievers, which sounds silly considering they have 4 off days in the first 3 weeks of the season. So I don't know, but, like, they're also pretty upfront with these guys, so – and people kept wanting to come here, so I don't know. It's a little strange.
Something about this situation clearly stands out for these guys, and maybe it's just that communication – or maybe it could be like we talked about with Napoli. Players respect that the organization is willing to go the extra mile, whether it's helping them find a job, which they've done in the past and probably will continue to do in the future, or just being honest with where they stand with the organization. And speaking of Napoli, by the way, I thought this was funny. He's obviously somebody that many people have already kind of positioned as a player coach. And I've been asked if he could fill a Giambi role for this team. And if they could carry a 26 guy to just be Giambi, if there was that spot in the majors, there's no question it would be Napoli for sure. But just to show how highly regarded he is by the coaching staff, yesterday I'm watching him. He goes out and he carries the lineup card out to the umpires. That's what the coaches do. Or you see, Barney go out there, the replay coordinator goes out there with the lineup card. That's what the coaches do. And Napoli took it out yesterday when they played the Rangers, and he's out there shaking the umpire's hand. And then he comes back in and sits in the dugout, and he sits 2 seats down from Tito on the coach's side of the bench. It's like this guy is just being groomed. Obviously, his playing career is winding down, and if he doesn't end up with a job, I would not be shocked whatsoever if he's around this organization in the future. And they somehow find because they're want to find coaching jobs, even though they don't have titles for them, that they try to keep them around in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. I mean, Carl Spierka still shows up every 5 minutes somewhere or other. Napoli, like, he has 2019 spring training instructor written all over him.
Yeah, I don't know how, I don't see how he would find another job at this point. I think it's going to be tough. And it was also kind of tough to watch him be playing in the 9th inning of a game in the mid part of March with guys with no names on the back of their jerseys in the lineup, and he's over there playing first base, knowing just how much he meant to this organization 2 short years ago. But clearly, the coaching staff and Tito at the head of that really value having him around if they're asking him to sit down with the coaches, and he's basically helping them. I don't know this for a fact, but he's down there looking like he's helping them manage the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's – we've talked about it. I mean, it's – he provides value, just his presence, and I'm sure the time he spent with Bobby Bradley is paid off for Bobby Bradley and pays off for everybody. And so it's harmless having him, and the fact that he is spending time with the coaches kind of speaks to what his future may entail, and also just how good the Indians think he can be in that sort of role down the line.
And then there's Rajay, who – man, it feels like he's destined to get a spot on this roster.
Yeah.
Even if he's not the best fit for that role, yesterday, anytime, you know this, anytime Raj gets brought up, Tito starts glowing and talking endlessly about him. And even after the game yesterday, asked about Raj, and he's glowing about the presence that he brings and the speed element that he brings. So I don't know. It seems like he has a pretty legitimate shot to make this roster, but we'll find out in the coming weeks. But I do enjoy this time of year because it's not the grueling grind that the regular season is, and it's a lot more fun. Yesterday, Trevor Bauer was in a rare mood once again, and you could tell right off the bat he's feeling good because the first question was, how did you feel today? And he ripped Andre Knott up and down for that, jokingly, of course, but was in very good spirits yesterday, and was even ripping on himself and his fastball. He called the worst in baseball, which – in fairness to Trevor, ranked 17th worst in baseball last year, according to Fangraphs. So give yourself a little credit, Trevor. But it is fun. I think spring training is – and I hope a lot of fans get to come down or come over, I guess, and experience it at some point because it's just such a different animal. And even we get to cover a little bit differently than during the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think everybody – I don't think all media outlets realize the value – in spring training, and you don't need to go down there for every day of the 7 week grind and, you know, write every single note. We don't need a Danny Salazar, Michael Brantley injury update every 5 minutes, but it's the atmosphere is so conducive to building relationships and getting to know players, some who might not make the roster, but who might be there later on. And others who you're going to see every day for the next 6 months anyway. And it's just, it's when players are most relaxed. It's when they're most willing to talk. It's when they have the most free time. And it's when you can get some of the best material and really get a good grasp for how players think. I mean, the interview we had with Trevor Bauer was that helped continue to just completely change my mind on him and gave me better perspective of his perspective. And that stuff, yeah, maybe once or twice during a season that you can get Bauer in that sort of element, but not – it's very hard to do it the way that spring training allows you to. And that's why, like, I know no one wants to read game recaps of a spring training game, whether it was on TV or it wasn't. It's – who cares? But we can – we're able to give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look of how every player stands as – we move toward the season, what they've been going through, what they've been doing differently, how they measure up as the season begins, and kind of how the organizational philosophy has the Indians set up to succeed in 2018 and beyond. And it's stuff that you don't get when you're just, you know, you drop in for a minute at spring training, and you can tell with the players, we've talked about this too, where, you know, when you make a 4-day trip to Arizona and you pop in, you have to, you're like trying to cover the rest of the time where you're not going to be there. So you ask the most basic questions to every player you can, and they've already heard those questions a million times, so they kind of get annoyed. And you can tell, like, there's so much value in just being there. And we're both grateful that we've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in Arizona this year, and I think our coverage kind of speaks for itself in that regard.
And you'll be back out here soon enough, so you won't have to put up with the snow for too much longer.
It stopped. The snow stopped during the podcast.
Well, you can thank me for that, transferring some of the good weather. Although, There's like a cloud over my head right now, and I don't know what is going on, but I'm going to need that to go ahead and leave before the end of the day. This is an off day here. I'm here to relax. I don't need clouds over my head.
You know, I spent almost 3 weeks in Arizona at the start, and the warmest day, I think my last day there, it was 72. Other than that, it was like 55 to 65 every day. Now, well, my car's... listeners in Cleveland are rolling their eyes. I get it. But TJ gets to do, he gets the 75 to 80 degree weather. Very fair.
Yeah, I'm looking at my car right now where it says it is 90 degrees outside. 90.
That's too hot.
please, I like it comfortable. Just like my air conditioning.
The doctor said I was in too good of shape.
That's where we'll leave it. You can subscribe to the podcast. Of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. We've now switched over to Anchor, and hopefully that goes better than the Bumpers experiment did. Bumpers has died. That's how we recorded podcasts in the past. So we're trying out a new podcasting system. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this ends up getting posted and people actually get to hear it. But we'll be available on other formats as well. But if you've already subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, nothing has changed. They're still going to pop up on your phone. So you won't miss a second, because even my brother was texting me earlier today. Hey, where's the new Selby's Godcast? It's Tuesday, dude. This is what I listen to when I work out. I need my fix. So even if there's one person out there listening diligently, I got to get this up and running and make sure it's good for him.
Yeah, I don't know anyone else who listens.
I don't know if the numbers could just be my brother hitting play 1,000 times. I'm not exactly sure. Do you have any parting words for our listeners this week, Zach?
We're what? 2 weeks out from opening day. It's, it's coming soon. This is my favorite time of year. I love March Madness. The Thursday, Friday of this week are my two favorite days of the year. And I like the way that the tournament kind of just feeds into baseball season, especially this year. It's going to make the next few weeks go real quick. And before we know it, we're going to be in the middle of the grind and not come up for air until at some point in October. So that's going to be it's here, TJ. Are you ready?
Just enjoy the last few days that we have where if somebody gives up a home run, it's not the end of the world, because once this starts for real, every moment is going to feel like the biggest moment ever, even though I can't tell you what happened on May 17th of last year and how it impacted the season. But you better believe when we get to May 17th this year, that's going to be the biggest deciding factor of anything.
It's the calm before the Twitter storm.
Right. Have a good week, everybody. We're out of here. See ya.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.